Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Breda Pest Management, the official pest control of UGA Athletics.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I love G-Day. I love it every year. It's always fun to see with our own eyes the culmination of guys who've been earning buzz, a lot of this behind closed doors, some of it not always as much behind closed doors. We'll get to that here coming up in just a moment. But G-Day is our time to sort of confirm and affirm all of the whispers and rumors that have been taking place throughout spring practice. Now, a lot of that chatter takes place within the bubble of Dog Nation, as we like to call it. But sometimes there are moments in which chatter about Georgia spring practice and, hey, did you hear this about so-and-so? Sometimes that kind of stuff also emanates from outside of our little corner of the world here, there as well. Sometimes it's the national media that are also kind of doing this here a little bit too. And I would say that all kind of makes this, you know, pretty fun. And an example of that, I saw where CBS Sports, Shehan Jayaraja, the writer the other day, looking at freshmen who could be, you know, fun to watch for upcoming spring games, things like that, only 10 for the entire country. And one of the freshmen that got mentioned is a guy for the Georgia Bulldogs, and that's the five-star, really exciting fireworks from signing day, flipping away from Florida State, Georgia kind of winning the battle that a lot of folks assume they would win, but kind of took a while to win because of the twists and turns. You remember how all that played out with the K.J. Bolden recruitment. But ultimately, the big firework for Georgia on National Signing Day has, by all accounts, seemingly had a pretty good spring. And now one of those, you know, kind of newcomers making a debut during spring practice that I think a lot of Georgia fans are very much in anticipation of. And it's kind of cool to see the national media sort of reflecting the same thing there as well. I want to show you what Shehan writes about K.J. Bolden and the excitement that could be for him around his first spring game here at Georgia. Shehan, the CBS writer, says, star safety Malachi Starks is out for the spring for Georgia, but that opened up opportunity for K.J. Bolden to get early reps. Bolden is a freak athlete who is a track star, both running and jumping there at Buford High School, and his athleticism and closing speed translate to the football field. While his frame is smaller than some other elite safeties, Bolden brings an air of physicality that has already turned heads in Athens. The Dogs lost a few players to the draft, clearing space for Bolden to enter the rotation. Now, let me tell you what I think is interesting about this. Now, there are sometimes moments in which the national writer, taking a little bit of a survey of a few things around college football, sometimes we would say they don't always accurately reflect what we think about Georgia because we're just closer to Georgia. We know it better. And sometimes the national perspective doesn't always reflect accurately what's really going on around here. It's probably just sort of a viewpoint from 10,000 feet. You know, we've probably seen examples of that in the past. But the one thing the CBS writer does kind of hone in on about Bolden that I feel like I've seen with my own eyes, and it's kind of nice to hear, you hope it's true, that this is also being borne out in spring practice right now. KJ is a little bit more physical than you realize. I think people have this thought of KJ because he was a very good skill position player at the high school level. And this was a guy that was catching touchdowns and doing things like that, kind of a star in the kick return game. I think that people had the assumption that, you know, maybe that might make him not quite the sort of, I don't want to call him a headhunting style safety, but like Lewis Cine was, you know, very, very much, you know, a willing, you know, big hitter, right? You know, someone that really loved that contact. You know, I think that people have kind of put K.J. Bolden in a little bit of a different category as a safety, perhaps. But I do believe that, at least based on what I saw with my own eyes, Bolden there at Buford, I do believe that K.J.'s physicality, his willingness to kind of get in there and make tackles, and especially there's an opportunity to like rip a ball free or something like that, you know, that real big sort of playmaking instinct. I certainly feel like at Buford, I saw Bolden embrace the physical part of the game. And if he's doing that here at Georgia right now, where he's probably not as big and strong as he will be the next couple of years, then I think that already speaks really, really highly of what KJ can become as a player. And I would say that most Georgia fans justifiably are very happy about seeing KJ for the very first time in a Georgia uniform G-Day two Saturdays from now. And when it comes to how we process rumor and innuendo and whispers and, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? I think the way we process this around here is that if we hear the same thing from two different people who are not connected to each other, then at that point in time, I would say we're a little bit more likely to assume this must be true. So CBS writer says, y'all wait till you see KJ Bolden, one of the freshmen to watch for the upcoming G-Day. Well, that could just be sort of empty hype, empty rhetoric. That could be potentially somewhat meaningless. But when the guy from CBS is saying it, and former Georgia greats who've been lucky enough to watch Georgia spring practice, when they're sort of saying it as well, all of a sudden now you've kind of got the thread narratively that you can sort of connect together, and perhaps you start to think, well, maybe this really might be true. Because do you remember, was it last week on our show, we had the great Terrence Edwards, the former Georgia wide receiver. And Terrence, having gotten a chance to be a part of a coaching clinic and get a chance to watch Georgia practice, he was certainly talking about the things that he was seeing. And K.J. Bolden, along with another freshman, Ellis Robinson, that was definitely something that Terrence was very impressed by. So if you're not quite so sure you believe the CBS dude, I know you like Terrence Edwards, and he's essentially saying the same thing. Let's get a reminder of that from last week's show.
So I've known K.J. since he was a little kid. He's done some training with me when he thought he was a receiver. I've known him forever. And the one thing that you can see from KJ, it's his confidence that he belongs. Even if he's not doing it exactly right, or he may have a missed assignment because he's still learning and adjusting to the college game, but his confidence level that he belongs, that's the part that you have to get over a lot of these kids, that the confidence level. And football is all about believing in yourself. And KJ believes in his ability. Is he doing everything right yet? Probably not, but his confidence, it just bleeds over onto the field of play, and that's half the battle. So that's going to get him on the field earlier. And if any other coaches were there to see this interception that Robinson had, this diving interception, where I think Ryan just threw the ball up, he just made this diving interception that was just unbelievable, Champ Bailey-ish type play. Like, the secondary that we will have in the next year or so is probably could be potentially just off talent. We know it goes a little bit deeper than talent, but just talent alone, this could be one of the top groups that we've ever had with KJ and Omar. And that group is something special to watch.
So we got a couple of things going on here. At the beginning of that clip, you hear Terrence Edwards essentially validating what the CBS dude says he's heard and seen. KJ Bolden, one to watch on G-Day. We're all on the same page on that. That's a really fun topic, and one of the reasons we're looking forward to two Saturdays from now. But in the midst of that, Terrence transitions to another Georgia freshman there as well. That's the cornerback, Ellis Robinson. And when Terrence was on the show last week, he's like, oh, yeah, KJ. And Ellis Robinson looks really good there as well. And in the midst of that clip, you hear Terrence start to describe an interception that Robinson got at the spring practice that he attended that he compared to the type of play that a guy like Champ Bailey would have made. Well, let me tell you this. Terrence last week on the show, and I got so much positive feedback from this, man, he brought the goods last week. Really astute analysis, but also just eyewitness account of what he had seen in Georgia practice. Well, this week, Terrence has backed it up even more on social media. Not only did he come on the show and tell us all about this, but then he provided photographic evidence. What's the old line? Pick or it didn't happen? Well, guess what? This did happen because we got the picture to prove it here. So Terrence Edwards putting out on X this week, hey, Dog Nation, this is the interception I spoke about last Thursday. Great play by that young man. So if you're not watching on video, you're not seeing this, but I would invite you to go check out Terrence Edwards on X, and you can see this for yourself. Look at the extension on the freshman cornerback, Ellis Robinson, to get this pick, this INT. And if Terrence wants to call that a Champ Bailey-style play, who are we to disagree with that? When you see the full extension there on that, I mean, is that not phenomenal? And when you pair that with the buzz that a guy like KJ Bolden seems to have right now too, does that not get you fired up and ready to go for G-Day? And the fact that Terrence, who was good enough to come on the show last week and talk about all this, then backs it up by getting the picture. And to me, you kind of put this, I don't know if it's exactly the same, but you sort of put this in a similar category of when the George Pickens catch escaped out virally in his first scrimmage in 2019. Or remember the Jalen Carter thing that he, you know, kind of had a little bit of a one-on-one battle with Trey Hill and got a big win there on that. And that deal sort of went viral from a Georgia practice. That sometimes these really cool moments have a way, even as secretive as Georgia can be, they have a way of sort of sneaking out sometimes. I sort of put this Ellis Robinson picture here of this interception from practice, I sort of put that into a similar category, and it's really cool that Terrence Edwards was kind enough to share that. By the way, speaking of Ellis Robinson, I guess happy birthday is in order for him there as well. His mom putting that out on social media here today, too. So happy birthday to Ellis Robinson. Bottom line, simple for us to all understand. Georgia's got some really very impressive freshmen, it appears, in the secondary. K.J. Bolden, you've heard about him a lot as a recruit. Coming up in a couple of weeks, you get to see him. Find out why CBS and others are buzzing about him. What Terrence saw Ellis Robinson do with the pick, pretty soon you may get a chance to see some of that with your own eyes there as well. There's a lot to be excited about, in other words, when it comes to G-Day. But perhaps near the top of that list, what some of these freshmen in the defensive secondary might be able to do. It certainly seems like they've been doing very good things thus far. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented today by Breda Pest Management. Happy to have you with us across all video platforms at 10 a.m., radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast, all those podcast platforms there too, posting the show right there around noon each and every day. Happy to have you a part of the program, and so thankful to our friends at Breda Pest Management who make it all possible. I mentioned being in Sanford Stadium. Many of you lucky enough to do that here in a couple of weeks, and when you're there, you're looking around and you're seeing, you know, this beautiful venue that we've attended games at our entire life, and you can be reminded that that venue kept bug-free, critter-free, termite-free by the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics. That is Breda Pest Management, which is kind of a cool thing. We certainly think that's a great honor that Breda has earned because of the reputation for service they've generated over the course of their time being in business since 1975. Multiple generations there of the family kind of making the business hum the way that it's supposed to. And now all of that success, 125 employees stretched all across our market area, can be leveraged for your benefit there as well. You can make the switch to Breda Pest Manager and put more money back in your pocket just for making that decision. It seems like every day now, things are getting more and more expensive everywhere you turn. So when you can save money, you need to. And turning to Breda Pest Manager as a way of doing that is the best decision you can make. So trust the official pest control provider of UGA Athletics to keep your home termite-free and bug and critter-free there as well, but also to put more money back in your pocket for making the switch. It's almost like your own personal NIL deal when you reach out to our friends at Breda Pest Manager. So find them online, bredapest.com. That's B-R-E-D-A, bredapest.com, for more on that. Today, got a little bit of an announcement we'll give you here coming up in just a second. Mike Griffith also on the show today there as well. Prior to that, though, I want to go around the doghouse. And, you know, I thought yesterday we got some really interesting stuff from Kirby Smart on what has become a little bit of a hot topic. And I would say we probably, you know, contributed to this here a little bit there as well. Our biggest concern for Georgia right now is the defensive line. And that's not meant to disrespect the players who are there, who are obviously all very, very talented. And certainly we believe the potential for Georgia is obviously immense, even with the concern that exists. But last year, I would say that Georgia's defensive line play was not probably up to its typical standard. I thought that the single biggest factor in the game that Georgia lost by 3 points to Alabama, which somehow prevented Georgia from making the college football playoff, I thought the single biggest factor in that game was the play of the Alabama defensive line. And I just, you know, if you could give me a magic wand that I could wave over Georgia football and say, miraculously, this can be best in the nation, I think returning and restoring the Georgia defensive line to that point is one of those things as a fan that I probably wish would be true for Georgia for this upcoming season. So with all of that in mind, and you've heard us talk about that plenty here on the show, what Kirby Smart recently said in a print interview at ESPN.com has, I would say, gotten, you know, some justifiable attention here because Kirby was asked about what he's noticed about spring practice here thus far, and he mentioned the defensive line pretty prominently in that discussion, and he did so in a fairly honest and candid way. Let me read this to you. The question from Chris Lowe, the reporter, is, what's one of the things that's gotten your attention about this team through the first part of spring practice? Kirby Smart's answer is very direct. He says, either we're maybe a little weaker on the defensive line, or we're really good on the offensive line. The glaring thing I've seen at practice is that the offensive line has done a really good job. That's not to say we're subpar on the defense. I should say, Kirby says, that's not to say we were subpar on the defensive line last year. We just weren't great. We didn't have a dominant guy, but we're always going to be good on defense. I don't know that we're going to be great this year, but I think we have a chance to be great on offense. So two different things going on there. High praise for the Georgia offensive line. That sort of backs up what we're also hearing, and incredibly optimistic about the offense overall. That also checks out pretty well, too, with people that we've talked to about some of this kind of stuff. But maybe perhaps justifiable concern about the defensive line, at least not being great, and at least not being, you know, all that comparative to what Georgia had in 2021 and 2022, when it did have those elite first round type, you know, defensive linemen here in the program. I would say those are, you know, certainly very compelling and candid remarks there from Kirby Smart. So when Smart met with the media yesterday after the scrimmage that took place on Saturday, you would imagine that the defensive line would be a topic based on what Smart says to ESPN. And it sounds like Kirby was, I guess, maybe a little bit more complimentary of the defensive line live yesterday with reporters than he had been to ESPN. You can judge this for yourself. Pretty happy with how the group performed during the scrimmage overall. This Kirby from yesterday.
I thought they did a really good job of having like energy, enthusiasm. We affected the quarterback. We had some disruptive sacks. Did not probably play the run as well as I'd like to, as high as my expectation is in terms of making goals of 3.3 or less per carry. We've had much more dominant scrimmages from a defensive line than we had Saturday. We had some guys nicked up and banged up, but I was pleased with the tenacity and the way both groups of line scrimmages approached it.
So mostly complimentary from Smart, seemed to be pretty happy what he saw from that group. And really overall, if you check out the Dog Nation YouTube page, Kirby is actually pretty complimentary about the scrimmage overall, I think you'd say, maybe perhaps more so than sometimes he might be. So take that for what it's worth there on that. But pretty complimentary of the defensive line. However, he does mention, you know, maybe didn't quite stop the run as well as I would have liked, you know, for them to there in that spot. And that does sort of echo what he had mentioned in the ESPN.com interview there as well. So it stands to reason that that would get a follow-up of, ooh, how big of a concern is it that this Georgia defensive line that didn't stop the run last year as well as it had in the past is also in a scrimmage, based on Kirby's own telling, not stopping the run as well as he would like for them to. Does this equal a huge concern for Georgia? And that's the moment in which Kirby Smart sort of pushed back on that narrative fairly forcefully. This is also Kirby Smart on the idea of if his defensive line can be capable of stopping the run as well as it needs to. Kirby once again from yesterday.
I'm not down. I don't know where this is coming from. There's a narrative out there I don't know about. I have no idea what you guys are reading or saying or seeing. So I'm not down on our run defense. We are not as good as we were that year, but we're better than we've been a lot of other years. So, I mean, there's the scales of that in terms of that. I would trade our group for any group in the country in terms of defensive line groups, and it's a collective whole. We've got a group that can get the job done. They're going against, you know, one of the best three or four offensive lines that will go against all season, each and every day. So iron sharpens iron, and we're getting better by who we go against. But I don't really do the comparison thing, so I'm not like going to compare them to Devontae Jordan and Jalen, who were, you know, all here at different times. So there was years with those three, and there was years that one of those three was here, and it was buried every year.
I don't know how familiar all of y'all are with like popular memes. I think sometimes I probably spend too much time online, so I feel like I've become a little bit more fluent in meme language than I probably, you know, wish that I was. You know the meme of the guy dressed in the hot dog suit and it says, "We're trying to find the guy who did this." That sort of comes to mind for me a little bit when Kirby's like, "I don't know where this is coming from, but being concerned about the defensive line." Coach, with all due respect, that comes from you and what you told ESPN.com like 3 days ago. Like this actually does start with Kirby here on that, but still a little bit more context I think matters. And I think that Kirby's obviously absolutely right when he says, listen, we still feel like we have a chance to be an outstanding defensive line. We still really like the piece in this room. They are, after all, I would add, all Georgia-level defensive linemen. So if you have the need to improve along the defensive line, if you have the hope to get better, then no better collection of building blocks to do so than the kinds of defensive linemen that Georgia typically recruits. That's just obviously true. But I think it's also equally true that this is, for Georgia, a very big concern. Frankly, it's probably not talked about by the national media as much as it should be, that if Georgia wants to be back at the national championship level, for as good as we think that Carson Beck can be and his offensive weapons, we'll talk to Mike Griffith more about that in a moment, for as much fun as that could be, Georgia needs better play along its defensive line here this year. Georgia's likely to have fewer players drafted this season than the last couple. And when you look at the difference, as we've pointed out before, it's the absence of those NFL-level defensive linemen right now. Some of that's because Brinson and Stackhouse came back, but what you hope if you're a Georgia fan is that they came back for a reason, to develop themselves into the kind of guys that can be prominent draft picks next season. And in 2024, Georgia can be the kind of defensive line that we've used to it being here during this national championship era. And that is around the doghouse here today. Now, before we bring on Mike Griffith, I want to give you a quick announcement. This is not a huge announcement or a fun announcement, just an announcement. But some of you have been asking, so we'll tell you. We are going to be back at our home away from home in Athens a couple of weeks from now. People say, what's Dog Nation going to be doing for G-Day? Well, we're going to be doing it the way we always do, which means Dog Nation postgame show live from the UGA bookstore. I also believe we're going to do our pregame show from the bookstore that day there as well, which is kind of a new fun wrinkle. But Dog Nation all over G-Day and at the UGA bookstore there on game day, including where I've been all those years. So we'll invite you to come by. You can be on the show and share your thoughts about what you see. We'll talk to you more about that as we get closer. But Dog Nation back at the UGA bookstore for G-Day coming up on April 13th. Excited about that. And speaking of the UGA bookstore, I also want to make you aware they've got some big things going on for you right now, too. You want to be decked out in apparel. By the way, the sweatshirt I'm wearing today came from the UGA bookstore. Pretty much 80% of the clothes I wear probably came from the UGA bookstore, but this one certainly did there too. And you can get great savings on some great apparel right now too. They've got their spring super sale going on, which gives you a chance to get 25% off select clothing and gifts. It's in-store and online. So make sure you check all of that out. Big savings on some really good UGA apparel. It's now through April the 6th there on that. So that is really good stuff. So you can find the UGA bookstore online. You can stop by in-store and take advantage of great, great savings on some really good-looking UGA apparel. 25% off the spring super sale right now there at the UGA bookstore. So that's all good news and a whole lot of fun. And speaking of having some fun, obviously we always do that with Mike Griffith when he's on the show here this week. So for everything happening currently at UGA spring practice and what could be on display for G-Day, let's cover all that ground with Mike right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith. Always great to have him as a part of our program. And he's got the spring practice background going there. Nice little look there for those watching on video. And Mike, let me just jump right into where we were just a moment ago. I thought that Kirby Smart said some interesting things about the Georgia defensive line yesterday. It's kind of a follow-up to another interesting set of comments he had at ESPN.com the other day. And it does kind of echo what we've said on this show plenty, which is, you know, I think the big question to be answered, and I don't think it can be answered until the real games start being played, is how good can this Georgia defensive line be here this year? It probably was a step or two below where it previously had been for Georgia this past season. So as someone who's in Athens and hearing Kirby Smart and talking to people who are seeing practice and things like that, how big of a concern do you think the Georgia defensive line should be in the eyes of UGA fans?
That's interesting. How big of a concern should it be? It depends on how good the offense is. It depends on how good the secondary is. I heard the show a little earlier, Brandon, and like you, I was a little puzzled when Kirby said, I don't know where this narrative comes from, and it comes from Kirby. Kirby said that the defensive line wouldn't be great, that he thought it would be good. He said he would take it over any defensive line in the country. That's interesting. Maybe this year, and we'll see what happens with Warren Brinson and Nazir Stackhouse. These are two guys that came back for their senior year, and I've written this offseason that you kind of hope history repeats. And we remember when Jordan Davis and Devontae Wyatt came back for another year, and that really springboarded the 2021 national championship team. You don't win the national title in 2021 if Jordan Davis doesn't come back. Time will tell how Warren Brinson and Nazir Stackhouse improve, and some of those young players, Jamal Jarrett and Jordan Big Baby Hall. We'll see how far along they've come. Xavier McLeod, the transfer from South Carolina, certainly looks the part. A guy that didn't part there on great terms, but could he be an impact player at Georgia? These are big questions. And ultimately, you wonder, as you said, will this make the difference in a championship run or a SEC championship?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, Brinson and Stackhouse, their decision to return was obviously a really big deal. And yet I would sort of feel like I don't necessarily need them to be as big an impact as, like, say, Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt were in 2021. Frankly, that may just be too big of an ask because of how phenomenal both Davis and Wyatt were in 2021. Obviously, they raised their draft fortunes in a big way because of that. But, Mike, I do feel like I need at least one really big success story to emerge here. Either it's a veteran coming back like Brinson Stackhouse, one of those guys really stepping up, or a younger guy like a Jordan Hall getting a better opportunity and taking advantage of it. Maybe Christian Miller could be mentioned in that category. You know, there's got to be a really big success story somewhere, I would say. And it almost doesn't really matter who it is, just as long as somebody really blossoms and emerges. You don't got to be Jalen Carter. You don't have to be Trayvon Walker. But it just needs to be a little better than it was a year ago, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, you could make the argument that the team that's had the best defensive line in college football has won the last three national titles. Yep. I thought Michigan had the best defensive line. So, you know, I don't think we're just picking at this. I think this is a really important position. I think this is an area where, you know, Georgia was historically dominant. They, I mean, my goodness, they led the nation in run defense like 3 out of 4 years, and they were in second the other year. So, and then last year they dropped down to number 18. And then we all remember the SEC championship game, you know, when Alabama needed to get a first down late, you know, Jalen Milroe, you know, ran right through him, you know, like whatever through a tin horn, as Nick Saban would say. And teams were able to run the ball effectively at times. I think if I recall, didn't Auburn have more than 200 yards rushing on Georgia last year, Brandon? Nice. So I do think, you know, and that game went into the fourth quarter. And let's not forget, it took a Superman effort from Brock Bowers, who's no longer here. So I'm with you. I think this is important. I don't know why Kirby would downplay it unless he's trying to, you know, give these guys some confidence. Because from the sounds of it, the offensive line, and Kirby has come right out and said this, the offensive line has gotten the better of the defensive line in spring drills.
Yeah, so that's certainly an interesting narrative to kind of watch play out, too. And you've got an interesting story up right now as it relates to Ernest Green, who's one of kind of the linchpins of what looks to be another very good Georgia offensive line. I would encourage everybody to go to dognation.com and read that. Let me transition, Mike, to this, which is that this time of year we're always having fun of, like, who you're looking forward to seeing on G-Day and who's got buzz and the excitement. And talking about, you know, Terrence Edwards shares the great picture of the Ellis Robbins interception, and there's a little bit of chatter about K.J. Bolden here right now, which I just think is really fun. But if I were to ask you, who are guys that you yourself are looking forward to seeing, or for Georgia fans who are kind of trying to make their list of who do I really want to watch for here in a couple of Saturdays, what does that list look like for you right now?
I want to see the running backs. I want to see Trevor Etienne, and I want to see Roderick Robinson. I know that Georgia fans are still adjusting from Branson Robinson to Roderick Robinson. And, you know, they love all those pictures of big biceps and, you know, weightlifter. But Roderick Robinson is the guy, Brandon, that I think is the name to remember for the fall. I mean, this is a guy that's 240 pounds with, you know, Kirby told Booster 7% body fat. So this guy sounds like a specimen. He sounds like a load. He did point out that he did not have an explosive run into scrimmage. Said some of that is, you know, Roderick left some yards out there, inability to make people miss, or, you know, perhaps some perimeter blocking that wasn't adequate to spring those long runs. And then Etienne, simply because he's a home run hitter. And you haven't had an all-SEC running back at Georgia since 2019. So that's why I'm not as uptight about Del McGee leaving as everyone else, because I think there's room for improvement at that position. And I know that Dell had coveted a head coaching position, and I'm happy for him to finally get one. And now you have a young gun in Coach Crawford that when we were at the combine, we were asking Dejon Edwards about him. He said, this guy doesn't play. This guy's serious. So I'm excited to see Etienne in the backfield. I don't know how much we're going to see Brandon. I didn't hear much about him at the scrimmage. What I did hear at a practice is he was pushing a blocking sled, and And then they put a weight on him and they made him push it some more. So obviously a pretty well-documented off-field incident that Kirby Smart is taking great care to make sure it doesn't happen again and perhaps discourage others, you know, from having behavior that falls outside of team rules.
Yeah, I think other than the obvious, the off-field issue, I would say that ETN and Roderick have been two of the most buzzed about players during the offseason thus far for Georgia. So I would completely agree with what you're saying there. I'm also kind of curious about this, and maybe there's no easy answer to this, but what do you think Andrew Paul fits in this discussion right now? You mentioned Branson Ramos a little earlier. I think he's obviously in the midst of an injury recovery that's going to probably last a little longer for him, if I had to guess. But in the case of Andrew Paul, where do you think he fits into this discussion right now?
You know, that is a great question because we haven't heard a lot about him from Kirby Smart. And this is a guy who showed great signs of being that dual threat, ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, ability to run. There was a lot of people that thought Andrew Paul looked better than Branson Robinson when both were healthy, true freshmen. So I'm not sure where he's at. I'm with you. It was kind of curious that we didn't hear more about him when he came back last season, even though we did see him flash at times. Could this be a name to watch? Perhaps. You know, I guess we'll find out about Nate Frazier once he gets here as well. I mean, I'm just excited about the backfield in general because I don't know. I mean, I thought last year's backfield was adequate, but we saw some injuries. You know, Dejon, as it turned out, played half the year with a sprained MCL. Kendall Milton, obviously, his injury history was well documented. You know, Cash Jones did about as good as you could ask of an undersized walk-on at the position. So, and Rod Robinson, I believe he was also slowed by injuries and ultimately sidelined. So last year's run game, to me, was probably, and while I say it was adequate, I mean, again, I'm talking about a 13-1 team here that finished number three in the nation. But by Georgia standards, I thought it was probably the weakest run game that I'd seen since I'd covered the team in 2018 or covered a lot of the 2017 team, maybe the weakest run game since 2016, Brandon. I think this year, though, it's going to be dynamic, and I think it's going to be important because we've heard what Kirby's had to say about Carson developing the relationship with those receivers. The better the run game, though, the more that will open up the pass game and the play action game. It'll give Carson more weapons. And right now, to me, that's kind of the buzz for me is surround Carson with all the weapons that you can, because he's so good at the line of scrimmage and he's so good at making decisions and spreading that ball around.
So I want to finish with that topic here in a moment. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we get there, because you mentioned something I think it's important here, which is, you know, we're in a day and age now when almost everybody is an early enrollee. Georgia does have a small handful of freshmen who won't get here all the summer. One of those guys is Nate Frazier. And, you know, based on the profile I had for Frazier as a high school player, I do think he has a chance to contribute here this season. I don't know that I have him cracking the thunder and lightning, Rod Robinson, you know, Trevor Etienne combo right now. You know, they seem like they may have one and two kind of locked up here at the moment. But could, you know, Frazier be a little bit like what DeAndre Swift was in 2017 as a freshman, for instance? You know, that sort of exciting, you know, change of pace, almost like the sixth man off the bench in a basketball sense. You know, I do think a guy that we won't see on G-Day, but we could hear from this fall, I still have Frazier on that list for me.
Yeah, Brandon, you bring that up, and it's so important because now with the 12-team playoff, you're looking at a maybe 16 or 17-game season, and it's such a war of attrition. And I don't know, maybe Alabama fans had a point about Jamison and Mechie in 2021. I certainly think Georgia fans had a case with Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey last year. A lot of this is just getting to the finish line healthy, right? And I've said that before, that it's like a NASCAR race. You got to kind of keep your car out of the wall and be there for the last lap. And I think that's going to be a key for Georgia, is to keep their team healthy. Last year, that schedule, I go back to that November schedule, and to me, that was what doomed Georgia, was having to play that schedule last November and Georgia Tech suddenly having teeth, and that ended up being a very physical one-score game. I think there was only – what, maybe 5 one-score games in that 29-game win streak, and I think two of them were in the month of November, right? Missouri, Georgia Tech, ironically enough, Missouri the year before as well, who would have thought? But bottom line, I think Auburn this year as well. Bottom line is this year's schedule a little bit like, got that easy game in November this year, just got to get through the tough road games, but I think you're right. I think they need Frazier. They need as many bodies as they can to get better as the season progresses, so that when you hit November, December, and now the 12-team playoff, you've got the depth to make it through all of those games, because we've seen what it can mean when you're missing one or two key players.
All right, I want to finish with this, because you wrote the story at DogNation.com. I think it's really interesting. It's probably the best stuff from Kirby yesterday, in-depth on Dylan Bell, in-depth on Dominic Lovett, in-depth on kind of the state of these sort of pass-catching weapons right now. Obviously, the need to replace Brock Bowers is a significant storyline, and people can read your story, but also watch the full press conference on the Dog Nation YouTube page. Kirby really went, you know, Arian Smith, you know, one name sort of right after the other, and really kind of gave you, I thought, pretty good stuff on that yesterday. And, you know, Mike, I kind of find myself in a familiar position here where, as a fan, I put faith in numbers, right? It's like, I don't know who Georgia's best receivers are going to be, but I like the list, right? It's like, you know, previous transfers like Ra-Ra and Dominic Lovett, new transfers such as Colby Young, an upcoming, fast-rising younger player like Anthony. Like, I don't know who the guys to truly emerge for Georgia are going to be, but I do like the list of the candidates being kind of as long as it is. And I put some faith in that just sheer volume of potential names here. What did you make of what Kirby had to say about that yesterday? And where do you think this race to be Georgia's most dependable pass catchers kind of stands here right now?
Well, I mean, I'd play devil's advocate. I'd say, are any of these guys first-round picks that he mentioned yesterday? Maybe. I mean, can Arian Smith, after in his fourth year, develop into a championship caliber receiver? Can Dylan Bell go from being a high school running back to a dynamic enough guy to lead a championship passing arsenal? I'll be honest with you, Brandon. I got a little spoiled by some of the talent that you've had with Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey and first rounder Adonai Mitchell. Boy, did we know what Stetson had in Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell and Brock Bowers in 2020, 2021? I'm not sure. But I do know that these guys are coming on. They're getting better. I'm just not sure I'm ready to say that this year's receiving core is as good as last year's. I don't know what you would say about that, or the year before, 2021 or 2022. And yes, there were times in 2022 when Adonai Mitchell didn't play, but he was there for the playoffs and he caught a touchdown pass in all your playoff games the last 4 years. So, I'd like to hear more about Anthony Evans. I know Dylan Bell's pretty good. And yeah, I know Arian Smith, if he ever puts it together, has a ton of speed. But Anthony Evans was a guy that when I saw in person, I was really impressed by. And I'd like to hear about some of that young talent making inroads. And I'd also like to see Georgia get another receiver out of the portal after spring drills, just to be quite honest. Look at the difference Adonai Mitchell made for Texas last year. Jermaine Burton made a difference for Alabama. Albeit I don't think he was as great as, the guys that Georgia had with Ladd and Brock. I'd like to hear more about Oscar Delp making impact plays. I'm excited about him. I think he's a really good player, but I don't know if there's a first round wide receiver, a first round talent, a guy that you can just count on to get open on every play, like you've had the last 3 years with Brock Bowers, or a guy like Ladd McConkey that you just feel like is going to get 10, 20, 30 yards after the catch if you get him in space. I don't know if there's that guy. I know Dylan Bell can make contested catches. I know that Arian Smith is a speed burner on that fly route. I know that Dominic Lovett can make that short, tough catch. Don't know much about Ra-Ra Thomas still. Don't want to use the word bust, but I think it's fair to say he was a disappointment last year. He was also injured, as we know, part of the year. I think concern is too strong of a word for receiver, but I don't know if I'm as excited about the receiver position as I've been when Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey were there.
All right. Well, it should certainly be interesting to see how it plays out, both G-Day and beyond. Mike, we appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management here today, and we will look forward to having you back on the program again very soon there as well. Good stuff, Mike.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
A couple of thoughts on the receiver situation for Georgia. A, it is absolutely true that replacing Brock Bowers is an incredibly difficult thing to do. And Bowers is one of the special players in recent college football history. So the idea that you're just going to move right on and not skip a beat, that's not going to be true for most programs in a situation similar to that. Bowers leaves, obviously, a very big set of shoes to fill. I'd say it's a little bit revisionist history to say, oh my gosh, you know, how do you replace Ladd McConkey? McConkey was an outstanding player at Georgia when he was healthy, but I don't know that many people, when they were watching Ladd McConkey over the course of his career at Georgia, was like, this is a can't-be-guarded style first-round pick. That's what he became, but in part he became that because of how the Georgia offense functions. McConkey himself gets credit for that, but some of this is also just the level of success that Georgia's enjoyed offensively, a stat that you've heard me mention before. There are only two teams in America that have scored 40 points per game in each of the last two seasons. One of those is exactly who you'd expect it to be, USC because of Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. The other is Georgia. So the point here is that Georgia has found a way to make it work with the talent that it's had. A lot of that is Brock Bowers, an all-time great. Some of that is a guy like Ladd McConkey, who certainly made himself into a very attractive NFL draft prospect. And some of that was a guy like A.D. Mitchell, also when he was healthy, didn't play a ton in 2022, but made some big catches in big games. Of course, we understand that. So the point is that the receivers who are now going to try to blossom are going to get a chance to do so in an offensive system that we know works. There's a track record of success here that we know works. They benefit from that. They won't all be great, though, right? It's like, that's why when you put your faith in numbers, you say, okay, well, you've got a list of, I don't know, 7, 8 guys, whatever it else, you know, whatever it is. Some of them will not have the kind of careers they want to have, and some of them will not have the kind of careers that some fans want them to have. But what you really need is you need about 3 or 4 of these guys, maybe 5, but 3 or 4 of these guys really become dependable and trustworthy. You've got that with a quarterback like Carson Beck. You've got the makings of everything this Georgia offense needs to be to get to where it wants to go here in 2024. Now, with that said, speaking of getting to where you want to go, for me, that's always Perfect Day Coco Cay, the private island for those lucky enough to be on a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. And I just think that Perfect Day Coco Cay is the thing that sort of sets Royal Caribbean apart from any other player here in this space, I believe. And I want you to check this out for yourself. And I really do think that you'll be as blown away by it as I am. Many of you know that the island, it's a private island there in the Bahamas, kind of divided into a couple of different, you know, parts. You've got the thrill side and the chill side. And if you're watching a video, you see the thrill side right there. We just kind of panned past the tallest water slide in North America. That's amazing. You've got the helium balloon that goes up in the air. You can be a part of that there as well. All kinds of, you know, really fun water slides you can ride. Then on the chill side, you've got the Oasis Lagoon, largest freshwater pool in the Bahamas. You've got all the beach and lounge, you know, options there. You've got the Cocoa Beach Club if you want a little bit of an upgraded experience. And now, for the very first time, as a part of Perfect Day Coco Cay this year, you've also got the wonderful new Hideaway Beach, that special adults-only enclave. It kind of a little bit of a Vegas pool party vibe, if you kind of want that. That's what Hideaway Beach is all about there as well. So Jessica Slater is a great travel agent. She can tell you more about this. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com, and she can tell you about all the fun things going on at Perfect Day Coco Cay with Royal Caribbean here in 2024. All right, let's bounce through a couple of topics here as we're cruising around the SEC. Yesterday during this space, we kind of updated you on Matt Zollars, you know, having visited Missouri. They're a little bit of a factor in the recruitment. Also, the Georgia visit yesterday. He also recently visited Alabama, too. Let's make sure we mention that. And so now we're, you know, kind of the waiting game here. Zollars set to announce there on Thursday. Anybody you talk to that knows somebody who knows somebody or knows somebody will tell you that it was a long, very fruitful visit to Georgia yesterday. It seems like everybody had a good time. These visits typically go well. Georgia's very good at doing this, providing the full array of benefits that you get if you come to a place like the University of Georgia. And I can honestly say I really don't know how this is going to play out. Here's all I can tell you. If Zollars announces for Georgia, that's sort of all I really need. Like, in other words, like, I know Julian Juju Lewis is a little bit of a factor here. I do get that. But if Zollars announces for Georgia, I will celebrate this as good news, and then just sort of find out what happens with Lewis after that. This is not one of those deals where, like, I feel like I or Georgia fans should be all in on Lewis. In fact, it's not even obvious to me that Lewis is the better player between the two. There are a lot of people who really, really, really like Zollers. And, of course, I say this with all due respect. Lewis is someone who I feel like I probably know a little bit better, know more about, because I've seen him play in person a handful of times here. He's clearly a prospect of great note, obviously. But Zollers has no short list of admirers in his own right here. So seems like the visit went well. There are a couple of SEC teams who are a factor here, at least another SEC team who is a factor, along with the in-state schools, Penn State and Pitt. Fascinating, because this story, however it plays out, is going to impact a lot of other recruitments there as well. So keep your eye on Zollers getting ready to announce on Thursday. Off the top of the program, we talked about CBS and their freshmen to watch for upcoming spring games, and we talked about what they said about K.J. Bolden. A couple of other SEC names got mentioned in this piece there as well, and I think they're both kind of interesting. One is a name we talked about the other day, and that's Cam Coleman, the Auburn wide receiver. And as we said the other day, because Coleman was earning, you know, some buzz, different national website the other day, and I would say that is probably true, that Coleman certainly looks like a very, you know, impressive prospect. We've seen wide receivers do really well in the Hugh Freeze offenses of the past, but I really don't know. And this is not me trying to be snarky and anti-Auburn, which Georgia fans obviously love being. I really don't know who's going to distribute the football to Coleman. I'm just not sure, but I'm guessing it probably is true that he probably is the wide receiver prospect he's been, you know, kind of promoted to be. Another freshman that got talked up on CBS was DJ Lagway, the Florida quarterback. And, you know, once again, you know, I don't see any reason to dispute the fact that Lagway's probably a pretty intriguing prospect here. Similar type thing what we said about Coleman, though. What you would question about Florida right now, is there enough around Lagway for him to be able to do what Florida fans hope that he can do? Here's the closest I'll come to, I guess, putting a positive spin on this for Georgia rivals. I'm going to include Tennessee in this a little bit, even though Nico Iamaleva is not a freshman. I would say that when you look at a Tennessee, when you look at a Auburn, when you look at a Florida, you know, these SEC teams that are trying to sort of figure out what they are, especially Florida and Auburn, because they're obviously a couple of levels below what Tennessee has been. We're in a situation with these programs where if one of these young players really does mature very, very quickly, then the fortunes could change a little bit. Now, Florida's schedule's so tough, I'm not quite so sure it even matters. But in the case of Coleman, like, if he really is a special receiver to the level of what, like, say, Luther Burden has been, or, you know, perhaps other receivers, you know, in the SEC. If he is that level of player, then you know, it's not so broken at Auburn that they couldn't be a better team, especially probably having a little bit more manageable schedule this year than they've sometimes had in the past. Maybe not quite good enough to really challenge a Georgia, or who knows about Alabama, but that could make a big difference, right? And Hugh Freeze needs somebody to do that. We'd say the same thing about Nico there as well. I don't know that Nico's performance in the bowl game against Iowa was quite as good as others cracked it up to be. His rushing ability is obviously pretty impressive, and I would say ahead of his throwing ability here for right now. But it was at least good enough that I don't dispute Tennessee fans and their optimism about what he can be for this upcoming year. And so when you kind of get that level below, you know, the teams that are sort of thought to be playoff contenders in the SEC, clearly Georgia and Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama beyond that, and to a certain extent Missouri, you know, right there as the sort of that fifth team. When you look at the next group in the SEC, which is probably like a Tennessee and a Texas A&M, and then you kind of get to the Floridas and the Auburns, you kind of have a sort of a glut there in the middle of the SEC where one player really being better than you expect for a young player to be, that could kind of change the fortunes of those teams in that situation. So I will be watching some of these spring games to see how good some of these touted freshmen are for other programs. Let me bounce through a couple of other stories here real quick just for a moment. So Lane Kiffin was talking about his roster there at Ole Miss, a lot of transfers. He talked about kind of the NFL vibe that exists around that program right now. And obviously that's one of those sort of two-edged swords where, yeah, you got a lot of guys who were there for a reason. They have a chance to sort of improve their professional ambitions. They're essentially already professionals, probably being paid, you know, high-dollar NIL fees to transfer to Ole Miss. But the one thing we'd say be really careful with, is that when you have kind of a mercenary roster, a la Florida State a year ago, when you have a mercenary roster like that, what happens when adversity strikes? In other words, look at the date in which Georgia plays Ole Miss. It's in November, relatively late in the season. There's a very good chance the team that Georgia plays when it goes to Oxford is very different than the feel around the Ole Miss team right now when hope springs eternal during spring practice, when everybody's happy and healthy to begin the season in the fall. You know, there is a chance that Ole Miss could look and feel very different by the time that Georgia travels to Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, because there's always going to be some adversity to deal with during an SEC season. And if you don't have a strong team culture being built, if it's a bunch of mercenaries who are just there for the paycheck or the paycheck they have a chance to earn by playing well here this year, sometimes that bond doesn't hold very well once adversity strikes. And I think that's worth watching as Ole Miss tries to make good on some playoff aspirations here this year. Then one final story to get to. You know, I think one of the things we need to do a little bit more of is talk about some of these quarterback competitions that are ongoing in the SEC. You know, a couple of teams that are probably, you know, a little concerned that their quarterback play may drop off this year compared to where it has been. We briefly mentioned Arkansas the other day, absent KJ Jefferson. That might be true. And at South Carolina, where Spencer Rattler actually, you know, went on to have a very good career for the Gamecocks, and now in his absence, you're sort of left to find out, okay, what's next? I would say it's a pretty odd QB competition here right now. It seems like Shane Beamer's liking what he's seeing from that, but if you're not aware, it's Robbie Ashford, the former Auburn quarterback, and some guy from Oklahoma that I don't know quite as well, and that's kind of what the competition is here at the moment. And when you're thinking about South Carolina, think about this, that when you look at all the schedule in the SEC, some teams actually have a slightly manageable schedule. I'd say that for the most part, South Carolina's schedule is a little bit more manageable than maybe it has been in some years for the Gamecocks. This could be an improved team here this year, but someone like Beamer really identifying a quarterback is going to be one of the more important offseason SEC storylines. So if you're looking for teams that could be better this year than they were a year ago, I would say that South Carolina is one of those teams, but a lot of work to do at the quarterback position to make that be the case. And we'll make that cruising around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Before we wrap up here today, let me also give a shout out to our friends at the Finnish Long Drink. A lot of you enjoying spring break here right now. I am jealous, I'm not going to lie, when I see these photos of the beach and everybody hanging out and having a good time. I wish it was me. Now, listen, I love being in the studio and talking to all of you, but I would rather be at the beach. That's just kind of how I go. And when I think about being at the beach, one of the things I think about, sitting out there in the sand, you got the chair, your kickback, and you got the Finnish Long Drink, because nothing goes better with like beach time of year than the Finnish Long Drink, whether it's the peach-flavored version, the peach day for limited time, the Long Drink Cranberry. How about Long Drink Strong? 8.5% alcohol by volume. I know some of y'all like that. Long Drink Zero, no carbs, no sugar. I probably need as much of that as I can get these days. Long Drink Traditional, that's still my favorite. It's the blue can. It's the grapefruit flavor. It's the gin kick. I love the way the condensation just sort of drips down the side. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail. Listen, I like things easy, and there's nothing easier than a mixed drink. You don't have to mix yourself. And that's what the Finnish Long Drink is all about. So in this fun category of beverage, the ready-to-drink cocktail, we would say that from a flavor standpoint, no one dominates that category like the Finnish Long Drink. So please go online, thelongdrink.com, and you can find out where you can pick some up today. That is thelongdrink.com. Make sure you enjoy some Finnish Long Drink. So a little bit of an explanation for today's Golden Shoe as we wrap things up. The other day I shared really a very cool piece of audio of Larry Munson calling the very first ever professional baseball game played here in Atlanta. And what we found out was in our audience, we had some ties to that. I think this is just kind of a really interesting coincidence. First of all, I'm always kind of amazed by the very interesting people that kind of come into our orbit here around Dog Nation Daily, always kind of a fun thing. So I shared this and Kate Tyler wrote in to say that her grandfather actually hired Larry Munson to be the Braves broadcaster after he moved with them from Milwaukee to Atlanta, her grandfather being the former general manager, John McHale, which is a fascinating thing, right? How would you like to have that as part of your family lineage? Former Braves GM who hired Larry Munson to be a Braves broadcaster. And then Winkle Ada writes in to say that he also hired my dad, who worked for the Expos for years, a great man. So how about that? A lot of backstory to sort of the Braves of yesteryear and Larry Munson there too. really interesting people there in our audience. We'll just sort of give a golden shoe for that entire online conversation, all stemmed from a really fun piece of audio of Larry Munson calling an Atlanta Braves game, which is worth hearing if you haven't gotten a chance to do that. So we'll give golden shoes out for that. Lousy, stinking Gators. They don't have much of a past these days, nor much of a future either. And it's been 1,243 days since they've beaten Georgia. That is our Gator Hater Updater. Hope all of you have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Breda Pest Management.